the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
AV Week is produced and distributed through a partnership with Rave Publications and AV Nation. For more information, go to ravepubs.com/AV Nation. This is AV Week, episode 57, recorded Friday, November 7th, 2012. Disney Touched Me.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week. It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host. With us this week is Joseph Gilio. He is the director of marketing for Casio. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well today, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right. Also with us is Adrian Boyd. He is the chief everything at Vector Sketch in St. Louis. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm good.
Good deal. And also, last but not certainly not least, is George Tucker. He is the engineering coordinator from World Stage, but he's also one of my right-hand guys here at AV Nation. How are you, brother?
I'm doing fine, but not least, you haven't talked to my first wife, obviously. She'll have a different opinion.
I have. She's not that interesting. All right, this week, we're going to talk about whether an AV company can make any green being all green. See what I did there? Also, Sony is got a lot of stuff going on this week, so they might not be dead yet. Whether or not Disney can make a touchscreen, which is somewhat interesting. And we're going to talk about whether or not AMX is killing your programmer. So, but first, this week, just up the road, actually, for me and Adrian, or is it Adrian and I? I don't know. I flunked in English. Just up
it's
the road from
context, Tim.
It is. It just up the road from St. Louis in Indianapolis, Indiana. The Cedia Expo is going on, and if you don't know what Cedia is the to residential what Infocom is to pro. Is that fairly fair, George?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure I have all my acronyms in order and everything. So every year they have a show just like Infocom has a show. We had ours in Vegas this year. They had theirs in Indy this year. So apparently next year it's in Denver, by the way, in case you're holding out for that one. But this is their show. This is their big thing. And a couple of the guys, both for Commercial Integrator, CE Pro Magazine, and a couple others, actually some people that we have on quite a bit, have been writing for Julie Jacobson and her blog Mob. One of them is Steve Greenblatt, our buddy from Control Concepts, and he wrote a piece that I found very interesting, and I wanted to kind of throw it around the horn straight off, honestly, because Cedia is this week. And Steve writes, because of this up-and-coming generation, and honestly, let's be honest here, us old fogies, who are most of us are probably going to be firmly ensconced in Generation X, if not older, we are no longer the hip, cool kids. We are the middle-aged fogies, and so there is a generation behind us. And these guys, you know, a lot of people call them Generation Y. Because of them, the pro and the residential is kind of intersecting here. They're overlapping. You're going to find an awful lot of manufacturers that are in the pro that are going after residential, and some guys in resi who are going after the pro. And Steve brings up stuff like HD Base T and AVB as one of the examples for this. Adrian, is Steve right? Are these overlapping, and is this a good thing?
Yes, he is right that they are overlapping. And whether or not it's a good thing, it depends on your perspective. If you're an integrator, it depends on your market segment. But we can tell by just looking at the gear we've been seeing in the last, 4.5 years. That everything is kind of starting to connect. You know, professional devices are looking and acting more like a consumer device, and consumer devices are looking like a professional device. So, you know, all the points that Steve is making in his article, he's spot on. I mean, he's completely right. And it all gets down to, you know, when we're looking at, you know, networks and just what people are doing with technology these days. Technology is no longer isolated by itself. Everything's talking to everything. And as integrators, as designers, as whatever we are in the industry, it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon now.
Jeez.
I'm sorry, it is.
But I get that. Joseph, you are from a manufacturer. You're from Casio. Is Mr. Adrian Boyd right? Is everybody kind of all in the same pool now? You guys aren't isolated out here, you know, hanging from a pole anymore. You have to talk to everybody.
Exactly. And I mean, over the years, I've seen the lines blur between residential and pro, where product is, in a lot of cases, starting in the residential market and moving into the pro market. With that said, from our side as a manufacturer, we have a pro product, which is a data projector, but we see it being incorporated into a lot of residential applications, and we're building our products to meet the demands of both of those markets.
Okay, George, walk me through this. If this is so good, why don't we have one giant show that has everything? Like Infocom / CEDIA / NSCA. We'll get to that in a second. Kind of like they do in Europe, the ISE.
Well, I think Adrian said, I mean, it's market segments. It's who's listening to who. Look, Infocom and CEDIA are trying to basically get each other's clientele, for lack of a better word, for the moment. You've seen this migration happening this way. I mean, migration's happening in both directions, right? You've got commercial stuff that's sort of using the technology is merging into some of the residential stuff, and the residential type stuff is merging into our everyday lives of work a day for very valid reasons. Because in your statement, you're right. The pretext of, or the pretense that they're different, really is going away. It doesn't really exist anymore. Just like when we used to have broadcast quality cameras, that really is gone these days. I mean, half the stuff that's done on TLC or any of those reality shows is an HD, I don't want to say handy cam, but it's one of those cameras that you and I can buy for a fairly reasonable price, right?
Or it's a DSLR.
Yeah exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so let go ahead,
but,
George.
But, I'm sorry, but here's the reason why it's happening. I mean, one is because they're you're right. He's right. X and Y generation are using it more and more, and there's expectations for it to be there. But what it does give us is the following thought. It gives us what? Rapid development. Because the lifespan in these products is not really expected to be as long as, say, a commercial product is intended, right? Commercial products generally have a, quote-unquote, stated longer lifespan, more durable, they'll last longer. We don't expect that from a consumer product. But that means that they can also develop and turn around stuff faster, give us new features, but they also get a new influx of revenue for saying that old iPad is good. Here's a new one. You can kind of do the same things. Nah, here's the newest one. You need this one to do the following stuff. The only real differential there is that shorter lifespan also means that we're spending more money for our stuff. But I see why that's happening. I mean, prosumer is really the new catchphrase for all of this stuff. I don't see the delineation anymore unless you're talking something they're using on the Mars Curiosity or in real HD broadcasting.
One of the people that at least we try to emulate here is Leo Laporte and the Twit Network, the This Week in Tech network. Not because anybody else is doing it wrong or incorrectly. It just that happens to be one of the people that I latched onto early on, and that's kind of what they do. One of their main switcher is made by a company called New Tech, and New Tech this week came out and basically redid their entire lineup. Before this past week, they had, I want to say, 6 or 7 different SKUs. Everything from their lower end of $5,000-$6,000-ish all the way up to about $30,000-ish. And they have basically said, you can have the $5,000 for input, or you can give us starting at $20,000 for the pro level. And they've done just that. You know, and back to Leo. Leo's entire camera setup are exactly what Jordan mentioned. He's got like 30 little HD 720p handy cams mounted everywhere, and that ability to be prosumer but still be there's still enough pro in there for it to look good is really, really cool and really, really revolutionary. When you look at, you know, one of the first cameras I ever messed with was an M7 from Sony 20 years ago, and list price on this thing was like 50 grand. You're not gonna, you know, for 50 grand, this, we're sitting here, right now, you can build an entire studio. You know, I don't know. It's cool. Go ahead.
You know, from the Casio side, I'm going to ask you, you guys are looking towards that, right? I mean, you guys are always keeping an eye on both markets now, and they're really merging.
Yes, as I said, we're seeing less and less delineation. Even when we launched our first hybrid projector with the LED laser light source, actually one of the first groups to latch onto it was really the home theater enthusiasts. Before we really started making inroads into the education and the business marketplace, it was amazing the amount of pickup that was seen in the home theater. They just saw it as a emerging trend and a leading edge technology to incorporate into home theater applications.
So my question is, and I know you're on the sort of marketing side, but I wonder how difficult it is to get engineers, or maybe how easy it is to get engineers to think in that vein rather than the isolated market one, market two, you know, two different boxes, two different SKUs. Now, I worked for a manufacturer for a number of years, and I know that that was a dynamic change that happened within the engineering department, that they started to look at, hey, here's a device, here's my intent, but then marketing people were brought in early on because they went, no, remember how we missed this where we made XYZ product and it sold the most in here in the residential. It was for commercial, but now it's sold in residential. They really are. They made an effort to say, now let's bring in those ideas. They may reject them all, but the engineers had to listen to that because they knew that that crossover, even in a custom installation market, was necessary.
So it's more along the lines of get rid of all the other SKUs, go down one. This one box does everything. If you want to put it in home, knock yourself out. If you want to put it in an auditorium, it's good for that too.
You know, there's different levels. Like the pro level was, you know, maybe it's a card cage and it has some higher quality, you know, H.264 kind of format because that's what you need in broadcast or in a higher quality. But that was really the only difference. Everything else that supported it was basically the same core.
Yeah, I think what you have is you have like the 80-20 rule. You build a product that meets 80% of the market requirements, and then there's those extremes at both ends, the tweaks they were talking like about, like right. CD or the rental people. They have special needs, and certainly that's not going to go away. And you need specific products for that. But I think the other 80% can work with what's out there and use that technology as long as you hit all the main key design and requirements.
Yeah.
It still sounds to me a lot like a reinforcement of the long tail theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's that you know, manufacturers can make multitude of products that supply very niche markets and still make a great deal of money. This is still doing that, even though you may have a universal device that's selling to all these broad markets, your long tail is those add-ons and special features and card cage adapter or whatever that is to meet the niche market needs and still make a good profit off of that smaller market segment.
Yeah. I like card cages. They're functional. So, all right, from CE
Pro.
They
have to be hot swappable.
Do have to be hot swappable because otherwise you'll crash the whole system. And one of our manufacturers, their new processor, makes it hot swappable. All right, Jason Knott over at CE Pro, also probably writing at Cedia, he's talking about the cloud. And the cloud in general the article really is based on a survey done by Wakefield Research about how people feel about the cloud, what they say about the cloud, what they think the cloud is, which is kind of weird. And one thing that he kind of gets to from the AV side is whether or not the cloud, quote unquote, can help or hurt the AV industry. And from my point of view and from my perspective, I've seen an awful lot from HD-based T to AVB to a bunch of other stuff over the last few years that technically is network. You could say that's the cloud. That's debatable, I guess. But really, the other part of the cloud for me is content. And let's be honest here, guys, whether you're Casio or you're Crestron, or your Extron or AMX, what we're doing is we're taking content from one place and we're putting it another place, sometimes several places. And so really, if the content is in the cloud, shouldn't our devices be cloud friendly? So my question, and George, we'll start with you. Can the cloud help us and save the AV industry, or will it hurt us?
I think it depends on your perspective. If you're a manufacturer making hardware that gets put in houses and it's very specific, as we talked earlier, yeah, I think it could be an issue. If you don't adapt to it and change your model of, you know, am I going to sell 1,000 boxes or am I going to sell 1,000 portals? Maybe it's a nuanced difference, but you know, it's not going to have knobs and it's not going to have my weighted knobs. It's not going to have, you know, you some other issues. Things that we do. Yeah, I got issues. But I think it could be a salvation. I don't think you're ever going to see this complete transition over to just the cloud, or at least not, you know, in the next, I'm going to make a guess here, next 10 years. Complete transition, because there are certain amounts of tactile response and interface that you need. But I think it's a good thing. It just means you have to change your model. You're not selling it by the box. You're not selling hardware in the volume that you once did. You're selling different stuff. It's sort of like what we talked about months and months ago about, you know, in getting into service and providing other forms of revenue for your installation company beyond programming and just putting boxes in a house. Although I do have one comment on this article, the more I read it, it really does sound to me like somebody tried to write an article for The Onion and put it in CP Pro. It's just, have you read this thing full through? I mean, yes, it's just like, are you talking about?
One of the things is one of the benefits of the cloud is you can work in your underwear. So yeah, that was very Onion-ish.
The nudity factor.
I'm sorry. The nudity. Yeah. Not the underwear. You can work in the nude. So. All right.
That's
yeah.
More than we need to know right now, I think.
That was way more than we needed to know. I mean, you know, I won't even go there because we were in Vegas together. So, Joseph, Joseph, help get me out of this. Is George right? I mean, are we not going to get away from anything that's physical? I mean, from my standpoint, I use Google Drive or Dropbox and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff. The content, like I was saying, is already there. It's already in the cloud. Guys like you. Can grab. I mean, as long as you have a network connector on your display, you can grab it technically.
Technically, yes, and that's what we look at is making sure that our device or our projector can be connected to as many devices or get content from wherever the end user, the customer wants to get it from. So, you know, we're the display device, but there's many devices that can be connected to our projector. So we have to be able to work with all those, whether it's coming over the LAN, whether it's wireless, whether it's hardwired. Now, where that content is coming from is independent from the projector, but we need to be able to deliver that once it's pulled down from the cloud and display it wherever that customer wants to see it.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is this more where you guys, as we move more and more to a network-based delivery, is this something where a manufacturer would prefer a standardized delivery mechanism or a standardized transport protocol, or would you rather have that, you know what, I've got my HDMI and I know darn good and well it's going to work, or I know I have my VGA or my composite connector where I know that that's going to work, rather than something like HDBaseT or AVB or whatever other protocols come down the line? Which one would you guys rather have?
Standardization is better because obviously it allows us to build in volume. I don't have to take into account all the different standards or different types of formats. Having an HDMI signal or a VGA signal is certainly the easiest for us to display. Right now, the challenge for us is pulling content over the network. While most devices have a LAN connection, it's still a little sketchy in pulling content through the LAN and delivering it and displaying it on the projector. But we are making moves there. We have, in our projectors, we have wireless and LAN connectivity, and we are able to deliver some limited display content. So we're not pulling the actual file down. We're showing the display content, but we're moving slowly towards the ability to pull the file content down and then display it.
Okay.
So I think you'll see projectors become more of the network hub within a display. So everything going into the projector and then being presented out through the projection lens.
Kind of like you guys are the switcher. You're the network switch.
Exactly.
I shouldn't say network switch. That's the wrong word. But the networked switcher. So, Adrian, can the cloud save or hurt the AV industry?
Well, the first thing we need to note about the article, it was kind of commissioned. The research, the survey was commissioned by Citrix. And what does Citrix do? They are a software manufacturer that makes virtualization environments.
They make GoToMeeting.
they may go to meeting. But Citrix, primarily what they do is you buy the software from them, you install it on a bunch of computers or remote workstations like Pogo boxes or whatever it can be, and all you need is a keyboard and mouse, and your operating system, your computer, is in a remote location, which is really good for large-scale companies, defense contractors, all sorts of businesses where, hey, I don't need to buy 48 laptops or 700 computers. I have a couple really, really good Blade computers and lots of memory and lots of, hard drive storage, and everybody can work off a virtualized environment. That's primarily what a lot of cloud computing, in a sense, has been looking at. When we look at cloud computing for, say, consumer environments, we look at our content stored somewhere, not at a hard drive in my house, or I can get it wherever I want. The bad thing about that is when you look at a lot of these cloud computing services is who technically owns the content now? Mm-hmm. Do you own the content anymore? Does it someone else? Like we look at Ultraviolet and even with some respect Apple, when you look at the cloud services, you technically really don't own the content anymore. It's like you're renting the content from them for a small fee, and then you have to start looking at your bandwidth costs and all the other fun things.
Well, look at the Kindle. You can't share. You can't loan a book to someone. You can't. And haven't they gone after libraries? Kindle?
Well, no, it's weird. You can for they have some mechanism that you can loan it for a certain amount of time to somebody else who owns a Kindle.
Right.
So when we look at that, that's what cloud computing is, kind of when we look at content. What I think would be really valuable in the AV industry is when we look at cloud computing as threats and targets, a guy from Think Logical told me about. Threats and targets is
a military operation.
Our target is our display or whatever we want to show that image, right? And our threat is that whatever it is, the Blu-ray player, it's your computer, it's a laptop. And instead of us having massive amounts of infrastructure, when we look at cable, it's I have a cable and it goes to a network port or it goes to something else, and that device on one end automatically finds where that display is and it sends the content. And that's technically what we're looking at when we think of or when we talk about cloud computing and AV. And that's what, HD Base T and AVB, when we look at those technologies, that's what they're trying to
be.
Look at that, be and trying to be. So I don't think it's going to hurt AV, maybe in the short term because of the confusion and all of the stupidity with content. It's going to be a headache. Once we get it all figured out, it's going to be companies that invest their time and resources in their people and look at this as a benefit, they will excel. Yeah. Companies that look at this as, oh, great, here's another headache I have to look at, they will not excel, and they will be behind the eight ball. And that's kind of what we have to look at.
Did you hear that, Joseph?
Yes, I heard that.
All right, that was free. You're listening to AV Week. I'm Tim Albright, your host. With us is Joseph Gilio from Casio. He is also he's the marketing director for Casio. Adrian Boyd from Vector Sketch and George Tucker from World Stage, one of the biggest control manufacturers in the industry. Them and Crestron are confusing the heck out of me, by the way, because not only are they the biggest control guys, but they're also doing really well, both of them, with HD over other stuff than HDMI, let's say that, because they're both doing fiber and twisted pair. But let's talk about control for a second, because that's really what the story's about. AMX, for the longest time, did not have a GUI control programming language or control programming software. Both Crestron and Extron did. Crestron's was called System Builder. Extron's was Global Configurator. And in the world of control programmers, if you knew how to do AMX, it was almost like guys who could do Linux. Seriously. I'm not
command line.
Yeah, because I've been through two levels of Crestron control programming, so I'm not certified in Crestron, and I've been through several on Extron. So I am nowhere near these guys. I don't have the long white beard, nor do I have the overalls. So that was a Linux joke, by the way. So, I mean, that's what the thing is. It was like, if you knew AMX, she was like the tier top dog, dude. You knew everything. And then they came out with a point-and-click GUI. And I'm like, holy crap, seriously? So the story that we'll put on the site is that they've come out with version 1.2. And as a guy who works in education, I think it's great. I think it's great when you give your client, the end user, the code. And I think it's great customer service to do that. And you give them the opportunity not to spend $1,000 to switch out a DVD player. Which is kind of what this does, you know. I mean, yeah, there might be some guys who are really ambitious and who want to go out and, you know, program from the ground up using programs like this. But for the most part, I see this as more like you give the end user more power. And if you do your job right, well, then, yeah, they're going to come back to you. George, do you see this as, I mean, I jokingly said at the beginning, you know, they're in the process of killing all the programmers. But do you see this as more detrimental to programmers, or is it not detrimental to programmers at all? This is more AMX trying to be customer service friendly.
Well, I mean, first of all, AMX has been trying to do a sort of very simple point-and-click type programming language for years. Yes. I remember, like, what was it, Pennsylvania Infocom, one of the rare ones in Dallas Infocoms, where they showed off this thing that they were developing that looked... Yeah, it didn't work. It never got released. But they showed it every show. It was just you drag over and it had the stuff in it already. We've all been trying to do this kind of programming for years. Everybody wants to be able to do it because it saves man hours. Yes, programmers who are hardcore guys will turn up their noses, just like guys who were in DOS or when Windows whatever came out and the command line was changed in its name and hidden.
Yeah.
All kind of sniffed that, you know, well, the true era of computing is over. Yeah, if you're a programmer and that's how you make your bread and butter, this could be something that concerns you. The same thing happened with other manufacturers who put out sort of point-and-click type systems. And some of those manufacturers actually limited the functionality they could put into it because of those concerns. It never will replace a real programmer. But we're getting there, aren't we? We're getting to the point where you and companies like AMX are going to say, I want to provide this customer service to you for you to be able to integrate and add these things and not have to spend $500 to do that, or $500 to have someone come over and change the TV monitor that you're controlling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, even for those who are wealthy enough to afford some of these higher-end custom integration systems, a lot of those complaints are there. You read those boards. It's like, wow, $500 for the guy to come in and he changed the last name from this to this because we got married. It's like,
yeah.
You know, you want the ability to do that. Or I bought a new VCR today. Yeah, I bought a new Blu-ray. It's not the highest end thing, but I want to control it. I have to wait 6 weeks and $1,000 for you to come in and do that?
Yep.
Add an icon, put the code in, and go, okay, you're done? So I think we're migrating towards that, where you need to do that. And then in the real value for the kind of programmers that you spoke about is in creating the special feature applets, the special code that does specific things. And being able to add that on in the back end that others, you and I, or someone who's just a consumer can't do. Go ahead.
I was going to say, not just that, but you've got one of Crestron's big things this year was integrated by design, and they're starting to get into whole building management. You're not going to do that type of programming with this program, right?
I wouldn't think so, no. Yeah. Not at this point.
Adrian, is this the death of the programmer, or is this, you know... no big deal. We're just kind of trying to make things easier for the end user.
Well, I'm taking my punch cards and I'm going home.
Oh,
yes and no. The best comparison I can make is probably the most popular consumer-based control system right now is Logitech's Harmony remotes. Okay. How does it work? I plug my remote into my computer. Doesn't matter if it's a Mac or it's Windows. I download some software, and then I connect online. I tell it what I've got, and then it automatically sucks down all the IR codes, and I do a few little GUI, you know, changes, and I'm done, and I have a fully functional, you know, remote. It's a very, very popular thing in the residential market, and you could probably make it work in commercial. I'm not saying you can, but you probably could if it was all IR. AMX and Crestron understand that, you know, yeah, not everybody's going to need the super quasi crazy programming functionality on some systems. Very, very simple systems. All I need to do is tell it the, you know, the very basic things like of a Harmony remote, and it automatically has those codes and that functionality, and it's set up and ready to go. I mean, they're just trying to make things easier for whoever the client is at the end of the day. What I hear from programmers makes them frustrated is when you have sales think that this is going to save money and they're going to make bad profits and it's going to be crazy. And it's like, no, you have to understand what it's for. And it's not for doing, you know, designing for doing the programming on a massive, you know, a command and control system or a multi-window environment. Or this is for very simple systems, you know, some rooms that are, you know, I have the exact same gear over and over and over, like in education, like in certain types of conference rooms, like in certain residential environments where it's, you know, I just need to make small little tweaks and I'm done. So, you know, AMX got it. Great. Crestron's got it. You know, Control4's got something. Extron's got something. You know, everybody and their dog has got a simplified level of programming software for the simple, simple, simple things.
I think I'm sorry. The Control4 goes even further, though, don't they? Don't they have a version now for the homeowner to do certain changes?
Yeah.
So they've taken it to that next level, which I think is inevitable. And I'm sorry, Joe. I didn't mean to step on you.
Well, that's okay. I'm speaking as a marketing guy. I see it as you were saying, bringing it to the masses. So it's not just selling software; it's selling the hardware that goes with all that. So it's, as I think Adrian, you were saying, it's for the simpler systems. It brings it to the masses, but there's still going to be the more complex systems that are going to require programmers. But obviously, programmers are going to see it as a threat. But ultimately, people probably still need some type of support, no matter how simple it is, because if they're not doing it all the time, they still have to have help figuring it out and being refreshed.
Yeah.
Isn't this sort of the iTunes model? I mean, what is iTunes? Is it really the profit center, or is it the loss leader to sell the hardware?
Or is it the opposite? Is the hardware the loss leaders to sell the content? I actually think it's that way. I think the hardware is the loss leader to get people in the environment,
which would be a good segue for another article we're going to talk about.
Actually, real quick, George, did you just say what I think you said? Where
what
did you just say that AMX and Crestron and the like will be allowing end users like residential guys to, you know, download some version of, you know, simple Windows or System Builder to make
my
adjustments?
My personal opinion, they should.
But do you think they will?
I don't know. I think I would say I can't judge that. I think they should. I think C4 has shown the way. And it depends on whether or not those companies think that the lower end market guys, the Harmonies, etc., are taking away market share that they need to have. And it'll be a huge fight. You know this. The internal politics of this community is, you know, we've got a set way of doing things. We've got our margins. Don't mess with it.
Oh, I think it'll be
but
Armageddon.
You can't stop it. You know, they've stopped it for a number of years. I mean, there was an effort to stop certain things for a number of years that, you know, we knew would affect our margins. But, you know, you eventually had to do it. The customer demanded it. The clientele are more intelligent about this stuff. They just pushed it in. You have to do this.
Yeah, I think so. If that ever happened, I think it would just be Armageddon. I really do. I mean,
no, I don't think. Again, it's not Armageddon because what are you going to do? You tell your programmers, hey, we're going to do this on certain models, and your profit on this is the margin on the hardware. Your profit on this. Do we lose everybody?
No, we're here.
I'm still here.
I heard the Skype thing, the Skype noise of someone going away. I don't know what that was.
George is a Pavlov dog. He hears a ding and he goes.
Donuts.
Go ahead.
Donuts.
Squirrel. Right, so you have to do this. And you have to.
Squirrel.
You have to. I'm going to forge through here. I have to do a certain amount of that segment saying, yes, you know what? The higher end, the guys who do this program, it's going to become a narrow market. Sorry, guys. The market's going to demand it. That's all there is to it. It may take 5 more years, but it has to be there. It has to be there. You can't sell. When Lutron's selling programmable lights in Home Depot,
yeah,
that you can then connect to, say, and sort of, you know, somewhat control system, and you can do it at home. Now you want the bigger one and whole house home and tie it into an integration with web, you need the dealer, fine. but how long before the demand is, I want that product with that feature that I can do. And, you know, it becomes a different support problem, but you're still going to have to do it eventually if your market's really demanding it.
Yeah, there is value in that. I'm just, I know guys. I know guys who will kick and scream and yell and throw things and say I'm done and all this jazz, because the second that, I'm not going to say simple Windows would ever be, you know, released into general, but System Builder, I can see that.
Or some form of it.
Or some form of it. I'm not saying, you know, all out, yeah. but a light version of it even. Right. A couple stories, actually, both of them from Innovate, Innavate, Innovate on the net, .net is the website for these guys. Two different stories, kind of the same thing. One is that it's a study that said that consumers' devices, like, you know, the iPhone and Android devices, are making touchscreens more user-friendly in the office. And this is kind of actually, I think, a good thing. Combine that with the fact that Disney's making a touch panel. I'm sorry, I can't get that out with a straight face. Disney, like the big Disney, like the company that owns, I don't know, ESPN and ABC and a whole bunch of other stuff. Joseph, as a manufacturer, why is Disney making a touch panel?
This is news to me. I'm not sure what. I think it's more just showing technology and their capabilities. I don't know if they can really get into consumer products. I don't want to speak for Disney.
Go ahead.
It's just interesting. But they have always been technology leaders.
Yeah,
you know, that's true. With their Imagineering and everything. So I'm not sure. Maybe they're just looking for other places to take their technology.
Adrian, is this something that Crestron or AMX needs to worry about, or do they need to welcome their new overlords?
Well, what's funny is you can walk into a Toys R Us, and what's one thing you can find? A Disney-branded television.
Yeah.
A CD player, yep. Or yeah. A DVD player, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. This makes perfect sense to me, based on the purchase that they just made this year of Marvel Comics.
Oh. Yeah.
Digital comic books. This is a big thing right now with the iPads, with all the Kindle devices, with all of the little Android devices, you know, digital content. So I could totally see Disney making a cheap interactive touchpad for all their Disney Interactive, all of the books that they sell, even, you know, now that they've got, they're in the comic book industry. It makes sense in terms of content. Oh, look, I can buy the Cars 2 branded, you know, touchpad of all the little gizmos and gadgets, and it's in a, you know, it's at a price that, you know, is affordable. It makes complete sense to me.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. George, is this an issue? Go ahead.
I think it's an issue that they have to be. Yes, absolutely. Because what they're showing here is not just innovation, say, a la the iPod or iPad, of gaining your information on a PC or, I'm sorry, on a laptop computing device that is simpler and, you know, more interactive in your interface. But this is saying that even other surfaces can be made into utilizing this feature. You can actually feel on surfaces that you lay it on a table or something of that nature, that these things can be made to feel better and feel differently to your environment based on how you are doing things or what part of the program you selected. I mean, if you watch it carefully, they show you how they do this. It's pretty darn cool. I think they're talking about virtual environments. I think they're talking about turning real environments into quasi-virtual environments. The game and toy factor of this is incredible, but just education, learning, and even workaday stuff. I mean, suddenly that table becomes a keypad. We don't need those little light things that come out and give you an illuminated keyboard. Everything's a keyboard. Everything's an interface all of a sudden. I do have to say, though, when you watch the video, somebody was rubbing their hand on that wall a little too enthusiastically, if you ask me. That was,
yes.
That was, which got me to the point of thinking, all right, well, I know about something called body hacking. Right, this is people who want to be first-generation cybernetic kind of people, right? Cyborg-type people, sorry. There's a couple of writers out there who have had these little pieces of metal put in some of their fingers that are magnetic and electro-inductive, so they can feel things and feel electricity, and they can, like, you know, pick up a paperclip with their bare finger. These are people who are starting to look into that kind of technology of, why does it have to be limited to a device in my hand when the entire surface of a room, of a house, can actually interact with you and feel differently depending on, I don't know, the weather outside or your mood or what's going on currently? And that led me to the what I think is the obvious migration of this technology to, is Disney going to become the first sex bot manufacturer?
Oh, great flesh tones.
Yeah, wow. I know you're disgusted, so you faint. Well, is that not the natural progression here?
No, it's not the natural progression.
There are companies out of Asia, and even here locally, that you know, they want to plug in devices to you know, your iPhone or your. And you got to remember what was one of the key reasons why VHS and Beta started to take off in the late 70s, early 80s.
I don't know. Don't say it. Yeah.
As we said earlier.
Yes. It was rentals of adult content. Okay. It wasn't getting Star Wars at the local video store. It was getting something else.
I have lost complete control. Lovely.
Well, listen. I mean, even to the point when you watch the video that the surface and the user must be on a common ground, whether physical or capacitive. There's a whole range of things that could happen within that beyond. You know, the pandemic, you know, education and experiencing virtual worlds. And it's, if only Second Life had this, its growth would probably be exponential.
Can we move on yet? Because I feel dirty.
You're the host.
All right, let's go on to Sony.
Control.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. One of the cool things that came out of Stadia is the fact that, hey, Sony's back. They're not dead. I'm not dead.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm feeling better. Sony, a couple of things about Sony. First of all, they have integrated with Control 4, which is very interesting to me. I mean, this is not the first time that a manufacturer has integrated a control company's protocols into their devices. Actually, the Casio has a line that has Crestron built inside. A couple of their projectors have Crestron built inside. So actually, we're going to start with Joseph. My first question to you is this kind of the future where guys like Casio and Crestron get together, guys like Sony and Control 4 get together to kind of build a relationship together and go, you know what, our futures are kind of hand in hand when it comes to control and the services that we deliver. And how do these things get done? Like, how does this happen? Does the guy that runs Control 4 call up the guy that runs Sony and say, hey, let's make this happen? Or is it vice versa, you think?
It's absolutely happening. As I said, we have Crestron capability built into our projectors, so that protocol is built in. And that gets back to what we were talking earlier about the projector becoming the room switcher or the network hub. So the more technology that can be put into the display device, you know, the AV integrators may not like it because now you're taking out all the other boxes that they're selling and integrating, but the more technology you get into the projector, you have one source, one connection, less cabling. That certainly makes it an easier install and a much more usable device across a wide range of applications, from the simple application to the high-end application. Typically, these things happen as you know, mutual discussions and talking about partnerships and where they can take it. So I can see where Sony was talking with Control 4 and decided maybe in response to what Crestron is doing with DLP projection that they needed to incorporate some technology into their displays to enhance their value and also differentiate. So I definitely see it as a trend emerging for the display devices.
George, do you think there's any danger from either company, whether that's Control 4 or Sony or like Casio and Crestron, from either company from hooking their fortunes up to another party that they don't have control over?
Well, there's always a danger, of course. It could be a flop and that's sort of designed onto you. But I think this is the Sony's actual rare chance. They're in such a fix because of all the problems they've had over the last couple of years, and we've talked about that on these shows before, that they're really in a fix. They've had so many flops. So the threat could be there, but this is also Sony's opportunity to say, hey, we're going to redesign this thing and say, we're going to add control. We're going to add built into this thing Vudu and Netflix and all the rest, because that's where you get your media. Why not try to make ourselves, like Joe said as Casio, the hub?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a receiver. It needs to distribute to multiple devices. Well, why shouldn't it be the centerpiece of that with a little processor inside and a little web server that says, here's your content, here's your interface. We'll download it for you. We'll stream it for you. But you still need your weighted knobs. So I think this is a threat, and it could be – it's a threat to the companies that are integrating with it, although it could be a boon to them. If this works out, they could be in the ride of being – the X inside, you know, it's not Intel inside anymore. It's the Crestron. It's the C4. It's the AMX inside. And you can build a relationship off of that. And that's where you say, this is where it's free. This is what programming you can do. You put a few lights up. Oh, you need to do more of the house. That's when you need a professional to come in. Again, tying that whole mass market surge into how do you get ride that wave without discouraging them? I mean, nobody wants to be in the realm of X10. Thank goodness. But I think we've grown since then. We're advanced. You know, we're more mature.
Adrian, X10 aside, is this? Do you think this is a good? These partnerships are good for each other and for the industry, or is this hurting? Maybe almost like people are teaming up on the playground against each other.
No, I don't think anybody's teaming up. I think it's good to develop partnerships with manufacturers. You know, especially if someone has technology or software that is going to help you and sell your products or vice versa. But what's also interesting in the article is it's Crestron certified. It's got AMX device discovery. Oh, and there's Control 4. Oh, and it's got, you know, a Zigbee RF. This thing's like a Frankenstein. I call it a Frankenbeast in the article, and I tend to agree. You look at the back plane of this thing, it's got like a 4-port, you know, switch in it. It's got, you know, all the IOs you could think of to integrate, you know, your standard home theater. You know, if I only had waited, I would have bought this probably instead of the receiver I've got now, which is a fairly, you know, hefty monster. So yeah, I think this is kind of cool. And if Sony's listening, I would love to have a free demo.
Oh, don't
you? Yeah, me too. You know, I'm gonna join in on that one. I'm gonna horn right in on you there, buddy, because I have an 8-year-old receiver that I'd love to update.
Okay, I don't have any, and I still think Sony's silly. So y'all don't send me one. So, and you're right, it is Frankenish, and it is kind of weird. But the one thing I see in this is the fact that, you know what, it's Sony at least trying. We'll talk about a couple of the other ones. The other two stories we have are two different displays, totally different, but roughly in the same price range, which is odd. George, we make fun of 3D here on almost a weekly basis.
What? And
not you, me. Okay. I say we because it was the royal we. You do when you're on. And I have been pining just as long as our buddy Don Mead has for LED or OLED TVs. They introduced, now I understand, don't send me letters, I understand what it means when Sony introduces something that either means it's dead or it's brand new. But they released something this week called their 84-inch 3D LED TV. And they did it over in Europe, and so the Euros, it costs about 25,000 Euros, and in case you don't have your handy-dandy calculator ready, that is $32,000 for here. Their other big TV this week was their 4K, which is a paltry $25,000. What the heck is Sony thinking in this day and age and in this economy, releasing something that is, I don't know, the yearly salary of a lot of people? George?
I think there's some value, despite what I've said about mass market stuff before and guys going half to going there. There is some value in having a product that is a luxury limited access. You build reputations and interest off of people saying, oh my God, look at this thing. It's a diamond encrusted LED, whatever. A diamond encrusted case for an iPhone or an iPhone.
Ooh, shiny.
Shiny bobble. Wait, what? So there is a value to that where if it gets used in, I don't know, commercial sense, it's going to be in more of the venues or in retail that'll use something like this with the occasional home client who has enough money to afford one in there. But there's a value to that. There's a value to having those high-ended, first cutting-edge boxes in your repertoire with at least decent consumer reports about it, and therein lies the rub. Will Sony be able to make the product work? Beyond that, it could be a benefit, yes.
Well, yeah. Can they make it work? Joseph, and all kidding aside, the reason I asked is the fact that of the $25,000 and $30,000 price tags on this. Is this something where Sony, as the manufacturer, goes, you know what, this is what it is, this is how much it costs, and it's not for everybody, maybe?
That's a fair statement. I think it's an attempt by Sony to elevate the brand, to create, as just saying, the Halo brand that hopefully sets a tone for the brand. Sony certainly can use some resuscitation right now. They've kind of taken a beating over the last decade. And I think they're trying to reposition themselves and reposition themselves as a technology leader. So it's certainly, I think they realize it's not for everybody, but it certainly says that this is technology that is high-end today, but over time will be brought to the masses, or something you can look to aspire to as we bring the price point down. You've got to start someplace with these unique technologies, and unfortunately it's usually at a painful price point that a lot of people can't afford. But there are enough people that will do that, and we'll put it in those high-end professional applications to make it visible to everybody. So I think it's interesting. I said, how does it look and how does it work? It's going to be the curious questions.
Adrian, is this a good thing for Sony, the fact that they're actually coming out with this, or is this just them another version of their Crystal TV?
Yeah, it's probably good for Sony. I mean, they'll be able to develop, you know, that niche market following. I think they're really trying to capture that, you know, that 4K market that doesn't exist yet. You noticed in the article they talked about they're going to push a firmware update to the PS3, which has been kind of their you know, this is how we got Blu-ray in every home device to do, you know, to output 4K resolution for this display. You know, and the price, you know, if you were to compare, say, a similar projector environment, you're looking at probably similar pricing. So I don't think Sony's too crazy on the price. Yet we're just used to seeing cheap flat panels in the last couple of years that, you know, are, you know, kind of like the same. So Sony's doing something a little different. Are they going to sell a lot of them? I have no clue.
Yeah.
I have no clue if they're going to sell a lot of them. You know, there may be the you know, the Bill Gates and the Mark Cubans and what's the guy's name from Facebook who will be able to afford them.
But maybe not.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a whole other issue. All right. Anyhow. Sorry, Adrian. Last story real quick, guys. There's a story coming out of Rave Pubs about an interesting company. Their name is Energy Squad, energysquad.com, and it is an all-green AV company. It's actually a distributor, and they're offering only green AV products. Joseph, you guys are one of those, at least you should be, with a couple of your projectors. Is this something that's viable, not just in this day and age, in this economy, but in general? I mean, do we really have enough green AV products for a company to put all their eggs in that basket?
I think they're a little ahead of their time at this point in time. There's certainly a trend to green AV and green technologies, but unless they've got some good money behind them, they're going to, you know, have to build slowly. But there definitely is a trend. You know, as you said, we are pretty much in the same situation. Our complete line of projectors is all lamp-free laser and LED technology, yeah. And everybody likes the technology, and we are continuing to grow our sales, doubling every 6 months, but we still battle against the lower-cost options that are out there, and, well, everybody wants to go green. It isn't always a low-cost option, so people really have to want to go green, so to put all those eggs in one basket, I think they're going to have a bit of a challenge ahead of them. But they certainly are looking to be pioneers in the industry.
Yeah, and there is something to be said for that, is for being a pioneer and a trailblazer in that aspect. Adrian, is this something that anybody should be going after, or is this kind of, I don't know, is it more more style than substance?
I think it's more style and substance. If you look at the products that you're selling, it's, look, we have LED light bulbs, and that's about it.
Jeez.
You know, they also have the Nest, in which I can buy at Lowe's. So, I don't know. I think it's just it's the old-fashioned, well, let's fit a bunch of buzzwords in a hat, and we'll name a company that. Kind of like a lot of AV companies.
Oh, jeez.
I'm serious. It's a long-standing joke I have with people. But they're selling basically LED light bulbs to the masses. Like every other, web-based company out there that's, selling whatever it is. Are they going to be effective? Are they going to be great? I have no clue. I think it's just, everyone's hopping on that green trend because it's the latest buzzword.
And it's green.
It's green. It's special.
Green is good, speaking from the Casio side. I mean, there are benefits, and you'd be surprised how many. But like I said, for them to just, like you said, sell LED bulbs, that's very narrow, very niche-y location to be in.
Yeah, it is. George, is this, I have nothing against these people. I don't even know who started this, but is this a smart idea, or is this just kind of a gimmick here?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't read much more beyond what the press release that we had, the rewritten press release we had, states. It sounds like it's, their hearts are in it. In the conversation we've had with Midori, she's all about green AV.
Yes.
She's all about trying to, do that. Even if it's sort of like H&M is doing, the retail outlet. I don't know if you know what that is, but H&M is a retail outlet for clothes. They've made a commitment in the last few days to get rid of clothes that use specially treated with chemicals to make them water resistant and all this other kind of stuff, and using different methods. Because the problem is that the reason that these jackets and pants don't wrinkle, or they don't need to be, they resist stains, is because they don't degrade. So they're always there. We're finding it now in everybody because it's everywhere. And people are getting it in their bloodstream, not from wearing the clothes, mind you, but from the manufacturing process or the clothes being sort of mulched up and winding up in landfills, etc.
So I have stain guard now on my skin?
Exactly. You probably have it in your bloodstream a little bit. It'll
so
show
you're
up.
Saying I won't stain?
So I think it's
so you're saying I can't get a tattoo. Is that what you're saying? I have great. My shirt has prevented me from getting a tattoo.
Yeah, I'm sure you're disappointed. You're going to have some of mine. But I think this is a commendable thing. Whether you can make a business profiting off of it right now, I don't know. This may be one of those, the highway is littered with, people who had the great idea at the wrong time. But I think it's something that we're going to be seeing more and more of people trying to do. Because if you're saying, I want to use only speakers that weren't using chemicals that, were polluting whatever rivers in China, or, stay in the atmosphere and contribute to the greenhouse effect, that's a commendable thing. And if if we can live with what those reproductions or what those sounds those can reproduce with it, whatever, differences there are from what we're using now, I think it's a great thing. I don't know if you can make a huge profit off it yet, but I really do feel like there's a trend towards saying, let's try to have less impact with the things we make and use.
I want a control processor made from a 256K modem. And speakers that are 90% made from recycled material.
Well, there you go. See, that's an option. I like that. Or even the frames and housings of certain devices can be made from certain recycled materials.
Yeah, that's
but, if we look at electronics as a whole, unfortunately, the process of recycling is a very dirty business right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I can guarantee you, if you have something made out of steel or aluminum, it's been recycled before.
Yeah, or glass. I mean, that's the thing.
Or glass. And this new company, I hate to kind of knock on them, but a lot of the stuff that they've got on their website, when you visit their website, it's kind of like we already have AV companies that are doing this. I mean, if we were able, if Matt was here, he'd certainly be telling us that everything they're talking about, it's stuff that he does in his business every day.
Yeah.
Lighting management, monitoring, and shade control, and the mobile management of your home and thermostats. We have a lot of companies in this industry. We have a lot of products that are all kind of doing this. With a lot of the things when we look at green technology and going green, and it's just another buzzword company that if they do succeed, awesome. If they don't, they're just another voice in the forest, I guess.
Another voice in the wilderness crying out.
Yes.
All right, that'll be it for this week. Enough snarkiness and us berating a company that just got off the ground. Feels like we're clubbing baby seals. All right, with this week.
Oh my gosh.
Has been Joseph Gilio. He's never coming back. He's the director of marketing for Casio. Thank you so much, sir.
You're quite welcome. I plan on coming back.
Oh, excellent. Good. We didn't disturb
me
you.
Off.
Good. Do you have anything you'd like to promote, whether it's your personal Twitter?
I don't want to sound like I was clubbing the baby seals. Obviously, Casio, we have a green product, and there definitely is value in that, in my closing statement. It is a battle. It's not, an easy sell. And as long as they have the stomach and the energy to continue fighting the fight, they will be successful, and that's what we're doing. But it is a challenge, and Casio is more than up to it, and I'm more than up to it to fight the fight for the green projector, and look forward to continuing to push that. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Also with us this week has been Adrian Boyd. He is the everything at Vector Sketch. He is on Twitter. He is also... give me your Twitter thing and also your website there, sir.
It's V_AV_CAD_guy. That's me on Twitter. My company's name, it's www.vectorsketch.com. And I have some new news. There's been some changes, which is kind of interesting and good. You know, this will be the first announcement. I haven't done the press release.
Okay.
But I've actually joined a new firm.
Oh,
yes.
Look at that.
Yeah, this is exciting.
Holy cow, we broke news. Yeah, congratulations. Who is it?
Yeah, the good folks at Avitecture in Sterling, Virginia.
Are you moving?
I'm already there.
Wow.
Wow.
The greatness of the cloud. Yes.
So you're moving to Virginia.
Yeah, no, I'm actually, I've joined their design team, and I'm working with them we're developing some new things, some new processes for them. They've been around for a long time. It's an exciting company, and it's been an exciting offer that's been extended to me. Vector Sketch will still be around. It's just going to go on to a little more of a hiatus, back burner stuff, and
okay.
I'll still do fun CAD stuff and all that, but just now I'm going to be working with an integrator to do some fun things across the country. And
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's see. There you go. We actually broke news here on AV Week. You
know, we broke news. Yes, yes.
I like that. All right. So that's Adrian Boyd. He's I still love your Twitter. So the_AV_CAD_guy on Twitter. So follow him. Also, last and certainly not least, George Tucker. He is the engineering coordinator for World Stage. Give people your blog and your Twitter, if you would, please, sir.
My Twitter is TuckerTues. You can find me at TuckerTuesday.typeed.com. I am also a rave blogger and a AV shout for the Red Band blogger. Although I do have one last comment in the vein of Joe. You know, the only problem with clubbing seals is they stay up too late.
And on that note, my name is Tim Albright.
I'm here all week.
Yes, don't tip your waitress too far. She might fall over. All right. If you'd like to follow me and my stuff on Twitter, it is TD Tim David Albright, ALBRIGHT. But more importantly for me and everybody here at AV Nation, please go by the website if you would, please. It is avnation.tv. avnation.tv. There are some blogs there. You can find... biographies and other stuff about all the shows, and to find the content right now, you can go to ravepubs.com /AVNation, ravepubs.com/AVNation. That is all the time we have for AV Week.